Alrighty, welcome to the Celtics Lab podcast brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. I'm Ben McFly. I'm joined by Alex Goldberg and a very tired Dr. Justin Quinn. It's President's Day, but more importantly for the NBA world, it's the day after the All-Star game, the day after All-Star weekend. And to talk about all of that, we're not just going to lean on my experience because I'm here in Indianapolis, but we're going to tap our friend of the pod from the Oklahoma City sister site of Celtics Wire, Thunder Wire, Clemente Almanza, is also here in Indy. So Clemente, what's up?
Hey guys, I'm doing great, man. I mean, just got done All-Star weekend. About to get back on the road soon, head back to OKC. But yeah, this is definitely like a fun little 3-day, 4-day event.
It felt like a lifetime. Pretty tired. So we welcome Clemente in to talk about, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. It just occurs to me that I pronounce names incorrectly all the time, so I wanted to get that one right. You and I got to see All-Star from behind the scenes, so we're going to talk about that, but we're also just going to talk about like what the product was and how it went. So we're going to hop right into the lab portion of the programming to talk about All-Star Weekend 2024. Let's talk about just like the product itself and the experience, the game itself, and we can talk about our experience. Clemente, how's that?
Yeah, that works with me.
I think universally people didn't like this All-Star game and maybe this All-Star weekend. With the exception that I'm willing to say that if the data comes back and with men 18 to 25, they did great ratings, I'd be like, yeah, that's probably about right. So maybe it'll be quote unquote successful in the long run. But let's assume it wasn't very good. Let's go around the horn. Scale of 1 to 10. Not how bad was it, like how boring was it? Like how bad was it if you're the league? So, Clemente, scale of 1 to 10. If you are Adam Commissioner.
Let's drink that coffee, people.
If you're Adam Commissioner, how are you feeling after this one? 10 being... we're not doing this next year. One being, hey, that was one of the finer things I've ever put together.
I probably put it as like around a 5 for sure. I mean, as you know, like this is probably like one of the most criticized All-Star games in recent history. And really, it's hard not to see why. I mean, the product itself was not that good. It was basically even more of a glorified scrimmage than the All-Star game usually is. And I feel like a lot of that's due to the fact that they got away from the Elam ending. They got away from the draft. And I know Silver mentioned that those two things were two things that they received negative feedback on recently, which is why they went back to the traditional East versus West format. But I thought those two things really spiced up the All-Star game over the last couple of years. And I'm still totally not sure why they decided to drift away from that. But, I mean, yeah, last night was one of the more forgettable ones for sure. And they're gonna see what they can do, because I don't think they can come back and do this again next year but under the same circumstances.
I actually think that they kind of got the idea right with the Elam ending. I'm fine with them getting rid of the East versus West breakdown into playground style team picking. That it kind of, it makes it more of a spectacle and less of a game, which, you know, to a certain extent, I see the point of what they're trying to do. I like the fact, actually, that they trimmed down the entertainment aspect of the night and put the game more as a focus the night of the All-Star game itself. But all of the events, I don't know if it's fixable. I think we might just have to kind of just, you know, wallow in the misery and use this as a vehicle to get an extra week's worth of things to talk about during the stretch run.
Well, so what scale 1 to 10, where would you put it?
Ooh, I do have to do that, don't I? I think I'm going to go with a 5 as well. It may not be very exciting, but this is not exactly like, you know, hit the panic button, but it is very far from a good product as well. In fact, I think it was a step backwards.
Alex.
And sorry, just to recap, the scale is 10 is it's an absolute crisis. We need to abolish the All-Star game. 1 is this is fine. Everything is good.
Or even great. Yeah, one is Okay. Trending in the complete opposite direction of what we're identifying.
Folks, we're at an 8 with the All-Star game. It is that bad. So here's the thing. The NBA has to pick a course. They have to pick a course as to whether it's going to be an entertainment product or a basketball game. And they have failed to do that. It's either going to be a silly, goofy entertainment product full of like wingdings and weird challenges and goofy stuff and, you know, like Elam endings and, you know, like windmills in the 3-point contest. And they got to go all in on that. Or they've got to go all in on making it a basketball game and really incentivizing the players to participate as if there are stakes on the line. So include a cash prize. Make sure that the All-Star game is set in a place where the players actually want to go, as opposed to just like having to spend a week, their only week of vacation during the regular season in
Boston, for example.
Right. Make it something where the players actually want to go there, where there's incentive structures in place for the players participating in the game and actually trying hard, or just go completely the opposite direction and go full, this is a ridiculous entertainment product, we're going to embrace the spectacle of it. You got to do one or the other. You can't do this weird half-hearted attempt at both, because then it's going to fall flat broadly as a product. And I just want to throw one other thing out there. And I know that this is kind of only tangentially related, but it's certainly not helping the All-Star game to reach a broader audience to have Kenny Smith saying sex is bullshit on air. Kenny, get it together. NBA, get it together. This All-Star game was terrible. And I really think that they need to fundamentally change what the All-Star game is, or else it's just going to be irrelevant. It's just going to be an irrelevant part of the NBA. It'll be cool for players to get named to the All-Star, but I didn't watch, and I didn't care about watching, and I really had no desire to watch.
I think Charles is also, Charles Barkley said some gross stuff. So yeah, maybe they were also really bored, but that's not an excuse to be gross. I'll actually do a little bit of peek behind the scenes to give my answer, which is to say, I was in the hallways after the game, because, or during the game, I wasn't watching the game. The game stunk. And so, first of all, a lot of big name celebrities left the game early. That maybe tells you something. But I saw Adam Silver leave the court and hit the back tunnel, and he was asked to schmooze. He was asked a question from a pretty high profile reporter, and he stiff-armed everyone. He got the hell out of the building. So I don't think he is very happy with how the night went. Maybe he's got a plane to catch, maybe he's got a meeting or a vacation, but Adam Silver was not, he didn't appear to be a happy camper leaving the building, if that tells you anything. I think if you're an All-Star game purist, it's a 9.5. I mean, it's stupid. It's a waste of time. It's just a commercial for Sprite or Starry or whatever. Like, it's not consequential in any way. I think what I think the league's goals are, it's probably fine. Like, we do this every year. It's always bad, and we still come back. The advertisers still come back. The young fans still come back. So I don't know. The NFL has the Pro Bowl, and the NFL's doing great. So why can't the NBA do this? It would be nice to have the 1998 All-Star game every year, or the 2016 All-Star game every year, but I don't think it like matters for the league or for the players. But if you are an All-Star game purist, or like this is your favorite day on the calendar, it is approaching irredeemable. So for fans of the All-Star game, it sucked. For the league, I think it's probably neutral. All right. Let's keep it moving. Let's go night by night and just talk about some of our takeaways that can continue to be negative, or we can walk on the sunny side of the street. Clemente, you were here for Friday, right?
Happy Super Bowl to all who celebrate from FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. FanDuel has so many ways for you to end the season with a W. Not only can you bet on who will win Super Bowl 58, but FanDuel also has bets. Which players will score a touchdown? How many points will be scored? And so much more. New customers join today and you get $200 in bonus bets if your first bet of $5 or more wins. Just visit FanDuel.com/Boston to sign up. That's FanDuel.com/Boston. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in Massachusetts. Hope is here. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Yeah, I was here the entire 3 day event for sure.
All right, so what did you think of Rising Stars or the Celebrity Game, either like as a fan or did you see anything behind the scenes that was cool?
Oh, yeah, I honestly thought Friday was probably the best day, at least for me personally, because the Thunder had five guys that they sent to Indiana, and Friday was the busiest day for them with Chet, Jalen Williams, and Cason Wallace all being part of the Rising Stars Challenge. And I thought Jalen Williams hit the game winner there in the finals between Jalen Rose's team and I think it was – who was the other? Oh, the G League squad. But yeah, I mean, I thought Jalen Williams looked great in both of his scrimmages. Really did a good job of just kind of exemplifying what he's been so good at this entire season, being this playmaking wing who can create his own shot and shoot at a decent clip from three. And then I thought Chet looked good as well. I mean, he had that one wheel dunk in the first game, and he just played with the flow of the offense in the scrimmage at the Rising Stars stuff. And then Cason Wallace looked great in his game as well, even though the Pau Gasol's team got limited in the first round. But I thought Friday was probably the most exciting day of the entire weekend from my standpoint, just because of the guys who participated. And I thought it was probably like the most fun event overall, because just how quick it was as well. I mean, it was a target score of 40 for the first two games, and then the last game was a target score of 25. The event didn't really drag. It wrapped up within less than 2 hours. I definitely enjoyed Friday for sure.
All right. Dr. Quinn, what about you? What did you think of Friday?
I did not pay too much attention to Friday or, frankly, any of the events. Like, I watched most of them, but they have, with one exception, I think were pretty unwatchable. The one exception, I think we should spend a little bit of time talking about, that being the Steph versus Sabrina thing. We kind of touched on earlier with the lovely comments, really putting a big smirch on what should have been a brilliant sports history moment. Hopefully it can continue to be. I think that was taking one of the more interesting facets of All-Star Weekend, the three-point contest, and then turning it to something a little bit more. I would like to see more WNBA-NBA crossovers, and not necessarily like men versus women, but people versus people competing. I think that there is a lot of potential interest that can be gleaned for both leagues in that context. So I would like to see more of that. I don't know what you guys thought about that event.
Well, let's just round out Friday, and then I'd much rather talk about that. Any other takes on Friday before we dive in on Saturday?
Nope.
I mean, that tells you something, right? Okay, so, yeah, I'm sure people listening know Steph Curry and Sabrina Ayasu of the New York Liberty had a shootout. We could talk about the Kenny comments. Maybe we don't need to give them that much oxygen, but, like, certainly if you have a take, let's hear it.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Look, Sabrina had 26 shots. She would have been tied for first in the regular three-point contest. She friggin' balled. It took a really splash brothery performance from Steph Curry to
his eyes just got so big as she continued to hit those shots. I was like, this is great. I loved it.
Yeah. I have some more takeaways there, but Clemente, what did you think of Steph Sabrina?
Yeah, I thought it was probably the best event of Saturday night, for sure. It's either that or the three-point contest, which really kind of exemplifies where the league at is right now with how three-point happy everybody is. And the dunk contest was probably one of the worst in recent memory. It felt like that they badly wanted Jaylen Brown to win it just because of the possible precedent they can set about having, you know, some of the best players in the league participating in the dunk contest again and not having to rely on Mac McClung and others to participate in it. But yeah, the dunk contest was just a complete mess, and it wasn't that great at all. But yeah, I mean, the Sabrina vs. Steph stuff was great. The three-point contest was great, as it usually is. And the skills challenge was pretty forgettable. But I mean, yeah, I mean, that's probably what your average All-Star Saturday night, where some of the events hit and others missed.
Yeah. Alex, what about you? What were your takeaways from just like Saturday night in general?
I have two kind of big takeaways related to the two kind of more blah events. I think the three-point contest and the Steph versus Sabrina shootout were both definitely clear wins, and there's nothing wrong with either of those formats. They should keep both of them as they are. Regarding the skills challenge, it will always be baffling to me why the NBA decided to make it a team thing as opposed to an individual thing, when the individual skills challenge was actually kind of getting somewhere the last time that they were doing it. They had a thing going with the smalls and bigs, and players who were actually good seemed to want to participate in it and do it. So I'm a little confused as to what their plan is there, because the skills challenge like 3 years ago, prior to the team skills challenge, was actually working kind of well. And now I just feel like it's a kind of jumbled, chaotic mess. It's almost impossible to actually follow what's happening on the court. And as a result, it's very hard to engage with it. With regard to the dunk contest, which is what everybody talks about, is every year how disappointing the dunk contest is. First off, if you want to get good players to do the dunk contest, maybe do not have them jump around on an LED gimmick court that they don't trust. Because Jaylen Brown pretty explicitly said, hey, I had to soften some of my dunk package because I did not trust the floor. Don't do that, NBA. The dunk contest, I feel like you want to make it about as simple as possible, like really make this thing, you know, a kind of clean, like easy, no wing dings, no, like let the players offer the gimmicks. Don't force gimmicks into the dunk contest in and of itself. Secondly, I think there's a lot of, you know, discussion around the dunk contest and how like, Jaylen Brown's performance was disappointing. Oh, all these other guys, you know, were not up to snuff. I can't believe we have like Mac McClung winning the dunk contest, et cetera, et cetera. You know, he's not even in the league. Shout out to Mac McClung. Great job. But again, we come back to what I think is a bigger issue for the NBA broadly, which is that the incentive structure for the dunk contest currently does not exist. There's really no good argument for like, why should the players go and do the dunk contest other than to try and, you know, I guess, cement their place in history, as if the history of the dunk contest is supposed to be like a very big and notable thing. And I think there are instances where the dunk contest was really cool. Obviously the Vince Carter dunk contest is amazing. You know, Kobe Bryant had a great dunk contest. You know, you've got D Brown, you've got these kind of iconic dunk contest moments that happen once in a blue moon. But by and large, guys, the dunk contest is just like a really hard event to make an impact on, because a lot of the dunks have already been done. There is a limit to how much you can like innovate with regard to the dunk contest. And yeah, jumping over Shaq is cool, and yeah, you know, trying to scale increasingly taller things is all good fun, but like there's not a ton of innovation left to be done in the post Vince Carter era. You know, the best dunk contest that I think all of us can think of in recent memory is Zach LaVine versus Aaron Gordon. And with that one, that was less about like this focus on like trying to do something new and innovative, and more just like having two guys who are really good at dunking come in and do that. And if that's the case, if the formula for fixing the dunk contest is just get talented guys to do it and get the best players to do it, then you need to offer a greater incentive structure to actually get the Aaron Gordons and the Zach LaVines of the world to come do it. Because right now there really isn't much of one. And Jaylen Brown, like, kudos to him for doing it just because he wanted to, I guess, bring the star talent back and like try it out himself and like go in on the art of dunking and all of that. But like, it just kind of fell flat.
I wanted to just jump in real quick and say, because you sparked something really interesting in my mind, and this might be one of the only ways to really, I don't know, I guess formalize the dunk contest a bit would be to, so in like figure skating, for example, there are very specific moves, or gymnastics, right? There's very specific things that you can recognize, like that is that, right? And so if you formalize, like how well can you pull off this kind of dunk, right? And then grade on that, then maybe that's a way to make it, like take some of those classic dunks.
Did you just come up with that?
Yeah. I had a
That's
lot of coffee. What do you
brilliant.
want?
That, Dr.
So
Quinn,
maybe
that might be the
that could do something.
that might be the best idea I've ever heard you say. I love that.
I don't know if I'm insulted or honored. I
That's how highly I hold you in very high regard. I really like that idea. And then we could get a Russian judge who's like a tight ass. That's
Yeah.
brilliant.
That's another thing. Can we please get better judges, guys? Please. I am
Well,
ab
okay, but the pushback is that these were Indiana guys. I mean, it was for the crowd.
Fair enough. I'm just saying.
The
We
crowd
can
hated
get better
The
judges.
crowd hated it. The
Yeah,
crowd hated the dunk
the
contest.
crowd hated
Oh my.
everything.
There is some I was at Salt Lake last year, and I remember our crowd being as bad or as hostile as this one was. Like, man, it felt like a playoff game kinda with some of the reactions, like negative reactions some of these dunks were getting, specifically Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, I
Well,
think
so they.
Jalen, just really quickly on JB did kind of set himself up for that, and I actually think that JB's dunks were not like particularly awful. They just weren't like notable. They
They were
weren't,
as good
you
as anyone else's dunks in the contest, and it did kind of feel like there might be a little itty bitty tiny bit of home cooking to get him across the line to the next round. But
And
what are
it's
you going
one
to
of
do?
those
Wait,
things. Hold on. It was definitely
Well,
rigged. What are you talking about?
yeah.
Do you think they were going to let him go home and not do the Terrence
No.
Clark dunk?
No, definitely not. But I do think like also part of this is just like he kind of like if you're the big star coming into the dunk contest on a white horse to save the dunk contest, you kind of have to actually save the dunk contest or else you're almost certainly going to get booed. And like again, I don't think it's like Jalen had a disaster performance, but I think the court was weird. I think he didn't trust it, and people were expecting like prime T-Mac, and they did not get that.
It also didn't help that Jalen got like much better scores than some of the dunks someone like Matt McClung threw down as well. And I felt like that probably played a role in him getting as good as it was because it was more about just how the voting or yeah, the scoring system went than it was, I feel like it than it was against like Brown himself.
Well, also he on his second dunk flashed the Boston parquet using the light up screen, and that we didn't even get to see the Indiana court on the down there, so that ruffled a few feathers. Have they always scored to the decimal point? That was so confusing to me. I kept trying to remember what
I
scores were, and I
don't
was like,
remember that, but maybe they did.
okay, can I do I'm gonna do 30 seconds on the dunk contest and let's move on. First, it was definitely rigged. They wanted to let him do the Terrence Clark dunk. I don't know what to tell you. Second, that made it worthwhile. Like, whatever you want to say, Jalen got to give Terrence Clark this unbelievable platform. I'm sure if you look at Google search traffic for Terrence Clark, the whole basketball world paused and remembered that kid. So successful, as far as I can tell. I'll say that the court felt different than wood. If you've ever played at like a newer YMCA or like the basketball court at the track in Brighton, the New Balance building, that like kind of almost rubbery feeling that they sometimes have, that's what it felt like. And I don't think Jalen had a chance to practice that. So he did say, there were dunks I was going to do that I didn't feel comfortable doing. So I think that the LED thing maybe was interesting and looked cool on television, but dramatically changed what the dunks were. Finally, as I commend Jalen for doing it, I commend him for shouting at Terrence Clark, successful for a lot of reasons. He said he and Jason didn't practice that dunk, which was is bananas because that's a really hard dunk. He tried like five different things at once. How did you not practice that? That's insanity. You could, if you want to go like conspiracy, you can read into why that might be. But yeah, that's a little cavalier for what was a very complicated dunk that didn't work out. Anyways, if you're a dunk contest purist, none of these, the thing that I said to people was, if I were to sit and make a, like, these are the best slam dunk dunks ever YouTube video, none of these dunks are in it. But, you know, if the Mac McClung could still dunk, like, there are still dunks out there to be done. I just don't think that there's NBA players right now whose personality or, like, way of being in the league is as a dunker. Like, Alex, to your point, when Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine did the dunk contest, they were known as in-game dunkers. If I can't think of anyone right now who, like, cuts their teeth on their in-game dunk, so I don't know. And then on Steph and Sabrina, just quickly, Sabrina had the place jumping. First of all, she was badass. But I mean, look, we're all guys on this call. We don't get to get the first or last word in here, but I think it was really inspirational. I was with a friend who's a woman, and she was really jacked up to see Sabrina do this. And when Sabrina spoke afterwards, she got a really loud ovation. I think it mattered. I think it inspired a lot of people. I think it's a huge bummer that people like Kenny Smith either said the wrong thing tongue in cheek, or that real misogyny got a word in there. Because that was, if you love hoops, that was a sick event. I think there was a gender slant in an inspirational way, but also, like, apropos of gender, it was just like a really interesting dynamic event.
This is one of the things, like, so Indiana, I've spent some time in Indiana, and Indiana is a hoops state. If you care about basketball and try hard at basketball and show that you care about what it is you're doing in a basketball related thing, Indiana crowd will absolutely go off for you. And it does not matter what gender you are. It does not matter what race you are. If you're there to ball, Indiana will show out. If you're there to jog around and do a half-hearted kind of entertainment product that mimics basketball but isn't actually basketball, the Indiana crowd will let you hear it. And I think that sums up a lot of what this All-Star Weekend was.
Yeah, well said. I want to double back on that. But first, let's just open it up. Any last thoughts on the weekend from, like, a entertainment standpoint? And then Clemente, you and I can talk about some of the behind the scenes stuff. Yeah, anyone just, like, hop in with things we didn't get to talk about?
We're gonna talk about the All-Star game itself, or
do we have to?
No, we really don't have to. The only thing I think that was really interesting in that is that there was at least a decent case for Jalen as MVP, but they seem to be pissed off about Halliburton not being the MVP. They were pissed off about everything in Indiana.
Oh, the fans. Well, so Halliburton scored like 15 points really early on, but then he trailed off a little bit. The final voting was 7 votes Dame, 5 votes Halliburton, so it was pretty close. Just as an aside, anyone know how many threes the Eastern Conference shot? 97. They shot like 44% on it. I mean, I suppose there's that. I think the best sequence of the game was Luka stuffed himself with the rim, and then Dame turned around and hit a 51-footer. That was like very All-Star gamey. That was sick. But yeah, I don't know. It was a snooze. There was a little bit of defense, a little bit in the first quarter. And then there wasn't.
There was enough defense to say, like, hey, guys, look, we're trying on defense. And that was really it.
I mean, what's insanity is, in a regular season game, you can still get to, like, 150 points while teams are, like, nominally playing defense.
Pacers do that every night.
Yeah, we could see something like that. Anyways, Clemente, you cover the Thunder. What do you think of SGA's night? And by way of Twitter, what do you think Thunder fans thought of SGA's night?
I mean, it was much better than last year, where Shea only played like 10 minutes and scored only like single digit points. But yeah, I mean, Shea was great this game, had 31, had that monster second half. And yeah, I mean, this All-Star game, it kind of had a slow pace to it, and that kind of benefits Shea, who's a pretty slow paced type of player, how he scores the ball and all that. But I mean, yeah, I mean, 31 points, 12 of 16 shooting, 7 of 10 from free, which is the most, like, All-Star thing of this entire night for him, the fact that he took 10 frees, because he doesn't really take a ton to begin with. But yeah, I mean, I thought Shea was great. I thought for a moment there in the second half, he was a possible All-Star MVP candidate, but then obviously the game got away from the West. And then Cat had 50 points off the bench on 35 shots, which is crazy. But yeah, I mean, yeah, Shea was great, man. Like his first time starting as an All-Star starter, and he looked like he belonged. I mean, he's been in the MVP conversation all season long, and so it's not surprising to see that he was like one of the better players on the court throughout the entire contest.
It's crazy that like an actual real basketball game with Shea in it is just absolute must-watch television. Like he's one of the most exciting players in basketball right now. Just like can't take your eyes off of him, level good. And a lot of it is to kind of your point from that day. Like he plays a very unique style. He's very much like taking his time. He's not like trying to like fly up and down the court or like get up a million threes. You know, he is very like precise and probing and intelligent with his game and really like tries to feel things out in a way that's cool to watch. And particularly against elite defenses, like watching Shea work is like watching a chess grandmaster. And that's why I feel like to some degree, the All-Star game is a weird place for Shea. Not to say that he doesn't belong, he definitely does. But like part of the fun of watching Shea is that he is just so good at precisely picking apart and unpacking these defenses and schemes that are trying to stop him. And in the All-Star game, nobody's trying to stop anybody. So it's just like jogging around and getting shots up. I don't know. It's weird. I feel like it part of the problem with the product is that it really takes away on a kind of more sophisticated level, just like how smart a lot of these guys are in terms of what they're doing in the reads they're making on a kind of like game to game basis. Nobody has to display their high basketball IQ in the All-Star game.
Yeah. And Clemente, go.
I was going to say like the game Shea had yesterday, he probably had like hundreds of times already these last couple of seasons where he scores like 30 plus points on super efficient shooting. Really the only big like caveat is the fact that he took 10 free pointers, but yeah, what Shea did yesterday is what he typically does during the regular season. So yeah, like you mentioned, like yesterday's game was super slow paced, and that really benefited someone like Shea who plays basketball at that level for sure.
Yeah, we just like Shea is a good example. Like we don't have guys who their thing is dribbling. We don't have guys who their thing is high flying dunks. So we've got perimeter players. So we had shot a lot of threes. Shout out to Halliburton for trying the white chocolate off the elbow. I mean, it went flying. It didn't land at all. But at least there were some attempts at razzle dazzle. We just didn't see much of it. All right, Clemente, I want to check in with you on like the Western Conference. But what was your most interesting or surprising like behind the scenes experience here at All Star?
Not really a whole ton. I mean, there's really not a whole ton of national media this year, at least compared to last year. And, you know, that kind of aligns with just how this All-Star weekend was probably like one of the weaker ones in recent memory. So I didn't really have a whole time to like really meet a ton of people outside of like the players I was covering, because the Thunder were basically had someone every day for sure, whether it was like Rising Stars practice, the Rising Stars game, G League stuff, and the All-Star stuff as well. But in terms of like the most interesting person I was able to, well, I didn't mean anybody interested, but in terms of being able to see like in the flesh and within a couple of feet of me, was probably I saw Bill Murray yesterday after the game, and I thought that was pretty cool for sure. And like I know you're able to see and like meet a bunch of other celebrities there, but yeah, it was definitely cool to see Bill Murray in the flesh, like a few feet away from me for sure.
Yeah, that was one of the highlights for me. Is just there were a lot of celebrities running around that we were near or could talk to for a brief moment. I'm always after a game like at TD Garden when they're turning the court into even if they don't have to turn it into the hockey stadium, just there's so much work that goes into it. I can't believe how much work went into this production. Behind the scenes, just like everywhere you look, cheerleaders are running left, mascots are running right, like people with boxes, people with machines, like the amount of effort that went into making this happen is you have to see it to believe it. So like shout out to people who do that kind of stuff, but that was really tremendous to see in the flesh. Like the amount of energy in that building was just honestly probably the least energetic place was the court. Everything else, people were busting their ass. So that was really, I thought that was cool to see.
I have a question for both of y'all who were there. There has been a lot of ado made, even on this show today, about holding the All-Star game in a place where the weather doesn't suck. What are your opinions of the weather in Indianapolis for this event, and do you agree?
Clemente?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely prefer that, but for selfish reasons, like for the average fan, I doubt that they had over the fact that media have to deal with really bad weather. But yeah, I mean, the weather here was pretty notably bad. It started to snow really badly here on Friday, and Indiana just did a terrible job at clearing the sidewalks. So you have to like really watch your step or else you slip. I almost slipped like five, six times on Friday alone. But yeah, I mean, that kind of comes with the deal. Like I knew heading into this All-Star break that considering that it was in Indiana and in February, there was a chance that it'll be this cold. But yeah, for selfish reasons, hopefully, you know, these next couple ones out in California have like much better weather where I'm not having to like wear like three layers of like clothes in order to stay warm.
I think this is probably a worst case scenario for that, in that this is probably the coldest small market. And so it's just like a city that doesn't have a ton of public transportation. It's a city that catching an Uber was almost impossible. And then they got hit with winter weather. So it feels really pressing right now, but it's going to be another 30 years perhaps where it's like truly a problem. Because people have said like the Toronto All-Star game is supposed to be really, really cold, but like you're still in Toronto, like a major city. New York gets cold. It's a major city. First of all, I went to school in Pittsburgh. Being back in the Midwest, people are just nicer here. Like I'm not being tongue-in-cheek. It's so palpable. The people here were unbelievably proud and excited. I'm holding, I don't know, Clemente, if you got one of these. When I got my press credential, they handed me a hat that apparently a volunteer group has been hand knitting these since the day they announced the All-Star game was going to be here. Like it just felt like being like a college town. Like the amount of pride for this thing was serious. People in Indiana, like Alex, to your point, like really take hoops seriously. So look, selfishly, someone who came to, I'm on a business trip right now. It would have been nice to be in a warmer place. I imagine this in Miami or Los Angeles is probably more difficult. I don't know. Clemente, you cover a small market team. I wouldn't want to deny this to the small markets, even if it's a pain in the butt for people like us or like that it doesn't excite the players that much. I think it was really exciting for the town. So quite frankly, I think we can pound sand. It was good for the league. It's good for the small markets. But
yeah. Specifically Indiana, considering just the amount of basketball history that the state and the city really has, for sure. But yeah, like I said, like I thought the average fan, like unless you're actually going to the All-Star game itself or you're in media going, like I thought the average fan like really cares like where exactly this venue is being held at, because at the end of the day, this is a made for TV type experience, and where it's being held at doesn't really really matter a whole ton for most fans, for sure.
But yeah, like the convention center, they just like had events. Like there's posters everywhere. Like there's just a buzz. I don't know what else happens with President's Day weekend in Indianapolis, but I felt like it was exciting for the city. Maybe if someone's listening from Indianapolis, they can tell me I'm wrong. All right, Clemente, we'll cut you in a second. But first, what does OKC need to do to go to the NBA Finals? Because we're hoping here on this side of the call that the Boston Celtics are headed to the finals. So. Yeah, the Thunder are a great story, a great team, but do you think that they can go to the finals?
I mean, if you look at the metrics, like they're one of the best teams in the league for the entire season so far. I mean, I think they're like top five in net rating, top 10 in offensive rating, top 10 in defensive rating, and then obviously you have Shai being one of the best players in the league. I mean, he's averaging over 30 points on such high efficiency that to the point where it's pretty historic, like, for a guard to average that many points on such high efficiency. Like, yeah, that hasn't happened since, I think, Michael Jordan for the most part. So you have all of that. I think the only thing that could possibly stop OKC from, like, really making a deep run in the playoffs is just the lack of experience and the lack of, like, center depth on this team. Outside of Chet, OKC doesn't really have a traditional center, and that's kind of hurt the rebounding. Like, the rebounding, they're one of the worst rebounding teams in the league, and they couldn't really address that at the deadline considering the options who were available. They were able to sign Bismack.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that. What do you think about Biombo? Because I thought that was a pretty good sneaky buyout ad for you.
Yeah, I asked Vince Williams about him after the Rising Stars events, because considering they were teammates for the first half of the season, and like he like lit up when talking about Biombo and talking about just how great of a guy he is and how great of a locker room fit he is. But in terms of on the court, like, he's a decent option considering who was available in the buyout market. And I mean, he has like nearly 30 starts under his belt already this season for the Grizzlies. And I mean, we've seen Biombo have pretty decent playoff runs with the Raptors. And I mean, yeah, he's probably the best realistic signing that OKC probably could have gotten. 6'8", a little bit on the short side, but he plays a lot bigger for sure. Really decent rebounder. Really limited on offense. He's more like your traditional rim running big who gets most of his points on assisted buckets inside of the paint. But I mean, all in all, considering he's probably your second/third string center, I thought OKC did a pretty decent job at grabbing him.
What do you think of Mark Daigneault, the pride of Leominster, Massachusetts?
Mark's great. Like, he's one of the best head coaches in the league right now. Like, and the players love him as well. The entire organization loves him as well. And he's just done a really good job of just kind of navigating through the rebuild, keeping everybody in check, and just fostering this really great culture and environment where a lot of the guys get a chance to really thrive in. But yeah, I mean, Mark's been, I honestly think Mark's probably the best coach in Thunder history, which I'm not sure how much that means considering that the other coaches are Scott Brooks, Billy Donovan, and PJ Carlissimo. But I mean, yeah, Mark's been great. He finished last year second in Coach of the Year voting. I'm assuming he's going to have another high finish this year, but it really feels like OKC's got their guy with Mark.
Yeah. I have only met him by way of press conferences, but he also seems like very charismatic and easy, which we don't have that experience with the Celtics coach.
Yeah, in terms of media stuff, like, Mark is great. Like, he always goes in depth with his answers and just does a good job at just fully explaining and answering questions at a really good level, to the point where, I mean, I've talked to people around the media that cover other team who are surprised that Mark's, like, usual press conference takes, like, 10-plus minutes. And, like, a lot of these other coaches are, like, less than a couple minutes at most. And that was, like, a real culture shock for me. So, yeah, Mark's definitely got us spoiled over here in the OKC market with just the way he handles media and the way he, like, gives great answers and gives great insight.
Cool.
Quick thoughts on the Gordon Hayward trade?
Oh, nice.
I really like it. I mean, I know Hayward spent a few years there in Boston, so you guys are pretty familiar with him. But, yeah, he I thought it was a really good move. I mean, considering what they gave up Trey Mann, who was stuck in a logjam behind a ton of other guards who wasn't going to get an opportunity here anymore. That was Bertans, who's just salary filler, and Vasilije Micic, who has been playing better recently. But, I mean, his production is pretty easily replaceable. But, yeah, I mean, Hayward, I thought Hayward was, like, a calculated risk for sure, because, obviously, he hasn't played since Christmas with a calf strain. So and he's supposed to come back here after the All-Star break. So there's always a chance that, you know, he ends up not playing a ton for OKC because of those injury concerns. But I thought it was a calculated risk considering he's $31.5 million expiring salary, has a ton of playoff experience, really good self-creating wing who can also catch and shoot the free ball pretty well. And really, worst-case scenario, like, if Hayward flames out, then you're going to have $31.5 million to play with in the offseason in terms of maybe improving the roster through free agency or adding a couple more bench pieces. So I really like the move. I think Hayward's going to be a great fit here. And like, really, the only concern is his health, which probably helped OKC when it came to negotiating this deal and not having to give up any serious pieces to acquire him from Charlotte.
All right, well, Clemente, I know you got to hit the road. So I'll shout out Thunderwire if anyone wants to learn more about the electric Oklahoma City Thunder. check out Clemente Anza's work at Thunderwire, and I'm sure on Twitter and elsewhere. Clemente, I'll put you on the spot. Who are the two teams that are in the finals this year?
Oh, man. I think the Celtics have been the best team in the league by far. They're the only team who entered the All-Star break with 40-plus wins, and they've just been a winning machine this season, man. So I definitely think Boston's going to be coming out of the East. And in the West, I mean, you kind of got, like, four teams. You have a four-team race among the top of the West with OKC, the Nuggets, the Wolves, and the Clippers. I think I'll go. I want to say the Thunder, but I don't know. I just feel it would be pretty unprecedented for a team this young to make it to the finals in their first real playoff experience. So I think I'll go with the Clippers. I mean, the Clippers have been one of the best teams in the league since they acquired James Harden. And obviously you got Kawhi and PG having great seasons. And then you got Russell Westbrook coming off the bench, being a good bench option. So I think this is going to be the Clippers' year where they finally make the finals and they get like a lot better injury luck. So I go Celtics versus the Clippers, and I'll go ahead and say that the Celtics win.
Good, man. That's why we invited you on the podcast.
For sure.
All right. Well, Clemente, it was good talking shop with you. The NBA treated the media to like a little party after the games, and we got to shoot pool and have a bite. So that was fun. It was good to see you. And hey, if it's Thunder Celtics in the finals, we're going to be doing this a lot.
For sure. For sure. But all right, guys, appreciate it.
Yeah. Safe travels, man.
Yeah. Guys, let's definitely be quick on this, because my buddy Steve is coming over in like 15 minutes.
Oh, no. No, Steve.
Does Steve want to come on the podcast?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
All right. Let's talk about Celtics news. And the news is that on Wednesday of last week, the Celtics defeated the Brooklyn Nets 136-86. And on Monday, the Nets dismissed their coach, Jacques Vaughn. I will, before I swing it to you guys for analysis, I will say that in his pregame press conference, he basically admitted that there was no more control of this team. At one point, he was asked, because the night before that, the Celtics had beat the Nets in Brooklyn. He was asked, how do you, you know, stop your guys from dogging it on defense? And he basically said, you know, I don't know what you do. I don't know if it's effort. I don't know if it's talent. I don't know if it's understanding, but I really don't know how to get individual guys and individual plays to do what they need to do. So maybe the writing was really on the wall there, but Dr. Quinn, I'm going to go to you because I think that you have a sneaky Celtic-centric take on this one.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong about it, particularly if it goes anything like a decision to leave the team from the Celtics assistant coaching ranks to Georgia Tech last season. Yep. I really don't want the Celtics to be without the services of Sam Cassell. I do hope if he is a candidate for this job, which I think he will be one of the top candidates for this job, that he gets it in the off season, but there is a risk that he could be poached.
Specifically by Brooklyn. Alex, what do you think of this? Big deal, no deal, little deal?
So it's definitely something that felt like it was going to be happening. I'm a little surprised by how suddenly it happened. I thought for sure that he would be fired in the offseason. But I guess Brooklyn decided after the press conference that you mentioned, and well, the fact that the Nets were deeply pathetic in their last game before the All-Star break in a way where you could visibly tell that the players like did not care. I could see a world in which Nets ownership decided that they needed to make a change. And look, you know, I mean, I think Jacques Vaughn, he didn't exactly blow the doors off of being an NBA head coach. You know, I think he definitely had his struggles. He came in as a replacement for Steve Nash, another coach fired by Brooklyn Nets, and after losing the locker room and, you know, kind of briefly recaptured it and then slowly lost control again. I think to me, this is less indicative of Jacques Vaughn's coaching abilities, which I think, you know, you can quibble with. He definitely is not like a brilliant coach by any means, but this is less to me an indication of Jacques Vaughn's coaching malpractice than it is the fact that the Nets have been profoundly mismanaged for the last 4 to 5 years, even when they had a loaded and talented roster with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. This was not a well-run team. There was really not much coordination between what did ownership want to do, what did the GM Sean Marks want to do, what were they looking for in their coach, what did their players want. It just seems like there's very little communication on all four levels of this organization. And until they figure that out, I think it's going to be really hard for them to be a relevant team. Now, somebody on this podcast, I don't know who, sure, a very smart and good looking guy, may or may not have identified in our preseason predictions that this Nets roster was deeply bereft of talent and not going to go very far. So I don't think it's entirely Jacques Vaughn's fault that he is in the position that he's in today. I don't think this roster was going to do anything notable. And like, Mikal Bridges is a nice player, but come on. Mikal Bridges is not a number one option in the NBA. That's crazy. So I don't think it's entirely Jacques Vaughn's fault, but I don't think he did a good enough job to justify keeping him either. So it's a clean break for Brooklyn. We'll see what happens. I'm sure that they will be hunting around for good assistant coaches like Sam Cassell or Charles Lee, for that matter. And I hope that those guys stick around in Boston through at least the end of this season. I wouldn't be surprised if the Nets just name an interim guy to ride out the rest of the season and do a full search in the offseason. But, you know, we'll see. Hopefully it doesn't impact our C's too much. But the Nets are in for a tough finish to this season, I think.
Jacques Vaughn would unironically be an interesting hire for the Celtics. I mean, he has, first of all, he's an NBA champion, but also as a coach, he has good experience that, I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll poach Cassell and Jacques Vaughn could take his place. Okay, let's quickly just like run through what we have on our list. Kyle Lowry signed with the Philadelphia 76ers. Delon Wright was cut by Washington. He's signing with Miami. I think it was officially announced. And maybe there's another move or two that I missed out there. Anything in the past few days change your opinion of the Eastern Conference landscape? Justin, I'll go to you first.
I think the Delon Wright signing, if he can play like he has played in the past, could be impactful. I won't say like it'll change anything other than it probably really annoy the Celtics when they play Miami in the future because it's a Celtics killer with a Celtics killer teaming up. But honestly, we haven't really seen anything. You know, the Lowry signing is at least interesting for Philadelphia, but I don't think that really either of those guards has enough in the tank to change, for example, a playoff series, but it'll make for some interesting wrinkles.
Yeah, I think the Kyle Lowry pickup for Philly makes a ton of sense, and it explains a lot of what their deadline was. Like, they don't make the moves that they make without knowing that they have Kyle Lowry in the bag. They don't trade Pat Beverly without knowing that, like, hey, we think Kyle Lowry is better than Pat Beverly for what this team needs. We have that signing locked up. We can afford to burn Pat Bev for our Buddy Hield needs and all of that. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, ultimately, Philly's destiny will be entirely determined by the health of Joel Embiid. And this signing doesn't change that. If Embiid does come back this season and is healthy, Lowry is an interesting piece to have in their backcourt for sure. And I think his game would actually complement Tyrese Maxey quite well. I think with regard to the Delon Wright signing, you know, this is just typical Miami Heat devil magic. They're doing the thing again where they're kind of slowly trundling into being a good team towards the back half of the year. They're getting a little bit better. Bam Adebayo is hitting his stride. They're getting a little bit healthier. And suddenly they're going to be the most obnoxious 8 seed of all time, and we will assuredly have to play them in round one, and then I will evaporate into a pile of ash. But the Delon Wright signing is definitely a good pickup for them. I think that, you know, just any backcourt depth at all for Miami is valuable. And Spo loves to have options. If, you know, Duncan Robinson is getting picked on, or if Tyler Hero doesn't have it, like being able to go to a steady hand in Delon Wright, who can just kind of settle the offense down, run pick and roll and set up Jimmy Butler and, you know, play pretty good perimeter defense. That's a good guy to have. I don't think he's going to play a ton just because Miami's guard rotation is stuffed, but hard to argue that he's not a useful bench piece for them.
Yeah. It probably smacks of no news rather than anything else, but it remains to be seen if the Celtics team is a juggernaut or still vulnerable in the postseason. So we'll put a pin in that. Just two quick things because it's on our agenda. Jason Tatum was asked by Bobby Manning of CLNS about the MVP race. He recently came in sixth in the ESPN BonTEMPS straw poll. Tatum acknowledged that the conversations about media narratives are frustrating, but he said something along the lines of, I guess I have work to do, which incidentally he does. And I don't like to promise future podcast episodes because you never know with technology, but I'm going to tease that we have an interesting conversation in the works on that topic coming. So stay tuned. Otherwise, Tatum's partnership with SoFi was announced last week. I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast. The Jason Tatum Foundation and the financial services company SoFi are partnering to provide loans and services to low-income single-family parents, specifically in St. Louis, but that project could expand. It's part of a broader partnership between SoFi and the NBA. Tatum and SoFi had an event here in Indianapolis that I went to that he talked about that further. That, again, we'll have more information for you over on Celtics Wire about that one. But I will just say that it's something that earnestly Jason Tatum cares about. This is not money laundering. This is not for PR. He gets plenty of PR with Ruffles and Gatorade and stuff like that. This is a partnership that he, I think, it feels really strongly about. And I will say, talking to the people at SoFi, they were really pumped to work with Jason. He was among two or three players that they were ever considering for launching this initiative. So it's a really cool partnership. Anyone who disagrees, there are things to quibble with for like how we help people in need in situations like these, but it's definitely not like nefarious or corrupt. I'll say that much. And then finally, first of all, thanks for listening. This episode of the Celtics Out Podcast was brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. Thanks for listening. Like and subscribe to our silly little podcast, because it is a silly little podcast, but you know it is not silly. Scott Pollard, formerly of the Boston Celtics, got a heart donor and had a successful surgery. The road to recovery on heart surgery and transplant is long, and we wish him all the health and luck in the world. But I will say, the science between heart transplants has changed a lot in recent years. So he has a really good chance at having not just a healthy recovery, but a long recovery. So we're pulling for that. So Scott Pollard and co, good luck out there. We're rooting for you. Celtics fans are rooting for you. Everyone else, thanks for listening. We will be back hopefully soon with this bonus episode that I just teased, but if not, next week per usual. And until then, enjoy your All-Star break. And adios from Indianapolis.